Why? I'm Joseph. This is Input English. The Input English channel is all about comprehensible input. This channel has lots of videos, and if you watch these videos and understand them, you will absorb and acquire the English language. If you need more information on comprehensible input, I have a lot of videos to help you with that. I started out with that question, why? In life, the questions that start out with why are the really interesting ones. Why is what we are trying to discover. Anyone watching this video who is familiar with my years of teaching at UC Davis might recall that I was famous for refusing to answer why questions. A question that began with how come was considered a poorly disguised why question. So what would be the basis of my refusal to answer why questions? I was an educator. Why would I not give answers to why questions? The answer is actually quite logical. When you give someone an answer, there is a tendency for them to stop searching. A simple answer to a question can stop the inquiry. And in an institution of higher learning, it's all about inquiry. It's all about curiosity. It's all about developing a more robust understanding of the way things are. Why is how we put these understandings together. So I figured if I gave someone a pat answer, I would do them a terrible disservice. A pat answer is a simplistic, perhaps superficial, glib, or even evasive answer. I figured that people at a university deserve better than pat answers. If we refer to something that is glib, a glib answer, for instance, would be offhanded, superficial, shallow, or perhaps even too smooth and slippery. Again, people deserve more than glib answers. Now, can we find examples in the 21st century of this sort of answer to our questions? Absolutely. What comes to mind is a question answered by an AI. As I look at answers offered by an AI, I frequently find them to be superficial, too smooth, offhanded, and glib. I think we deserve better than that. That's why none of the episodes on the Input English channel are made with an AI. Someday, AI may be good enough to provide quality input. At this point in the 21st century, my opinion is it is not up to the task. So what I'd like to talk about today is how all this ties into effective language learning. We are language learners. We are trying to learn our second, third, or fourth language, and we want to do it efficiently. Our time is valuable. If you look at things that interfere with language learning, it doesn't take long to find them. I've talked about things that interfere with our language learning on this channel. I'll list a few. Perfectionism. An attitude that life is too short, it would take too much time. How about a fear of failure? People who have failed to learn language in the past might not want to try it again because of an ongoing fear of failure. Procrastination interferes with language learning. I'll get around to it tomorrow. Today, no, tomorrow, I'll start tomorrow. So today I'd like to move beyond some of those difficulties and focus our attention on an interesting psychological effect that can have major impact on how we learn. The underlying description of this phenomenon dates back to the 1920s. A Lithuanian-born Soviet-era psychologist was working in Berlin. Her name was Bruna Zagornik. She had been eating in a cafe with friends, perhaps colleagues, and she marveled at how the waiter was able to keep track of all the orders and serve the food to the correct person with no mistakes without taking any notes. The orders were not written down. She concluded, as a preliminary conclusion, that this waiter had extraordinary memory ability. It got interesting when one of her party went back to the restaurant to retrieve something that had been left behind. This person spoke with the waiter who had so carefully and correctly taken all their orders and inquired about the object which had been left behind. It quickly became clear that this waiter had no idea who this person was, even though the waiter had very accurately taken the orders and served the food correctly. Once that task was done, the waiter retained no memory of who this person was. It was this observation that allowed Bruna Zagornik to describe this human trait, this human psychological trait. Stated simply, the Zagornik effect is that uncompleted tasks stick in our memory better than completed tasks. That description of the Zagornik effect dates back to the early 20th century. A lot of people have considered the implications of this, and much has been written. You can find quite a bit on the internet about the Zagornik effect. There is not much analysis on the internet that I could find that convincingly ties this Zagornik effect into language learning, specifically comprehensible input. But the evidence is actually there. We can look at the evidence and draw our own conclusions. There is an expression in English, open loop. This can be used in different contexts to mean different things. If you are communicating with someone, you could have an open loop because you sent them information and they did not confirm that they received it, agree with it, will comply with it. So that lack of a response on communication can be referred to as an open loop. If the situation requires communication to be very precise, you might want to close the loop on all important communication. When I was flying an airplane with a friend of mine who was also a pilot, we did not want any controversy as to who was flying the plane and who was just acting as a passenger. If I wanted my friend to take control of the airplane, I would say, would you take control of the airplane? Or would you take the controls? He would grasp the yoke of the aircraft, that is, put his hands on the yoke, the steering wheel of an airplane, and he would say, I have the airplane. And then he would wiggle it. The two yokes, that is, the two steering wheels in the front of an airplane, are linked together. And so when he wiggled his wheel wiggled, my yoke wiggled in my hand. So I got a haptic signal. That is, I got that vibration signal into my hands that confirmed that he was on his yoke. And then I would close the loop one final time by saying, you have the controls. And then my hands were off. At that point, I knew, based on our convention, based on the way we were communicating very precisely, that he was flying the airplane. We could transfer the control of the aircraft back the other way by doing the same thing in reverse. So that's one way to describe closing the loop. It's one way to talk about open loops versus closed loops. But there's another way to refer to open loops and closed loops, and that is in learning, in inquiry. If you have a question that has not been answered and you're searching for that answer, that's an open question or an open loop. The thing about these open loops or open questions is our mind, our human psychology, holds on to them. You would observe this in your own life. If you have an unsolved problem in your personal life, in the household, it's hard to get it out of your mind. You go to sleep at night and you find yourself thinking about that problem. You get up in the morning and your mind immediately goes to that unsolved problem. Investigators have observed that once you close the loop on what had been an open question or an open loop, the mind tends to forget it. This observation has big implications for us, the language learners. Do you remember in school that you would study for a test, worry about the test, try to get everything sorted out in your mind, and then you sit for the test, you complete the test, you get your grade, then you forget all the stuff that was on the test. It has been observed that if somebody is considering a question, searching for an answer, and they get a simple pat answer, they tend to forget about it. They don't retain it very well. In school, when we are learning subjects within the curriculum of the school, we are learning at an explicit level. We are learning facts, we're memorizing them, we're committing them to our short-term memory, we're trying to put them into our long-term memory, but it is at an explicit conscious level. School systems have not created methods for didactic teaching to create intuitive learning. Learning at the level of the subconscious. In athletics and music education, there is learning at the subconscious level, and a lot of people use the shorthand muscle memory to cover intuitive learning at a different level, not just the facts, but an understanding at the level of the subconscious. With comprehensible input, we're not trying to memorize a bunch of facts. That approach amounts to the traditional methods that have failed most of us earlier in life. We are trying to learn a language at all levels, including at the subconscious level. When we try to speak, we don't want to be reviewing lists of vocabulary in our mind. We don't want to be thinking about grammar rules. We want the words to flow out of us. And so that calls for learning at the subconscious level. So I've given you a lot of ideas to mull over in your mind. The information I've given and represented as factual comes out of psychology research studies. Now it comes time for us to draw our own conclusions and come up with a plan. At this point, I don't label what I'm saying as universal truth. This is how I understand it for my purposes as a language learner. I value open loops. I value open questions about my new language, Spanish. Because what I find is that over time, these things are going through my mind. Sometimes I find myself dreaming while sleeping in Spanish. Other times, an idea will come into my mind about some part of Spanish that I have not really understood in the past, and I realize that I'm developing a little insight how all this input is starting to become clear. Research shows us that if you look up a lot of words, you decrease the efficiency of comprehensible input. As this was explained to me, it was explained in terms of time efficiency, utilization of our valuable time. That is, if we look up a word, we avert our attention away from the content, the input, and we change the subject to looking up a word, and then we have to come back and focus. That's a logical explanation, but I think it goes further than that. If you look up a word, you close a loop. It's a completed task, and your mind will typically not hold on to that word or expression very well at all. You'll forget it the way you forgot things in school after the test. While we're on the subject of testing, I think it goes the same way. I don't want to take tests. I don't counsel people to take tests. The only test I would recommend you take would be a test that is required of you if you're trying to get into a school, trying to get a scholarship, trying to get a job, something that requires you to demonstrate your proficiency at a certain level, and thus a test is required. If there's no test requirement, don't take tests. It's not a good use of your time, but it also closes a lot of loops. Remember, in school, the test is what we do just before we forget everything. Really. So now that we know about the Zagornik effect, and we know that unfinished tasks will stay in our brain and be retained better than completed tasks, it would seem to me very reasonable to avoid looking up words and avoid taking tests, because we want those open questions not to torment us, but to allow our brain to do its magic and learn this language. It is common for people, when they want to start something like learning a language, to do a lot of preparation. We're taught to prepare for things in the future. We should be ready. I would submit, now that we know about this Zagornik effect and the benefit of open questions, for the language learner, there should be no ready. If we start something before we're ready, we're going to generate a lot of open questions, a lot of open loops, and those questions are going to stimulate our brain in all its different functions to search for the truth. This is why I didn't answer why questions. I wanted people to stay curious. This is the basis of me not worrying about being ready. In my world, there is no ready. I just begin and start looking for the truth. Nagging questions are opportunities for us to learn and learn better. I invite comments below, and if you like videos like this, be sure to click on this one next.